It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Final thoughts about Tech Ed in New Orleans, a look ahead to Build, and, of course, the Xbox One announcement. Paul will also have some thoughts about iOS 7. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 316, recorded June 13th, 2013. The Bing Ending. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer or your smartphone and tablet, too. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code Windows. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Windows. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com, use the offer code Windows6. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything going on out of Microsoft, and lately that's quite a bit. Paul Thurrott is back from his City of New Orleans train trip. Good to see you, Paul.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you as well.
We mocked that you were riding on the City of New Orleans.
Oh, like the Charlie guy from the Boston subway.
He never returned. No, he'll never return.
A lot of people that go to New Orleans never return.
And for good reason. It's great.
Yes.
Laissez les bons temps rouler. Also here, she came back early from New Orleans. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Good to see you both together again.
Yep. Here we are.
We were actually together a lot of last week. I'm a little tired of Mary Jo, actually.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised you didn't go to E3. I mean, wasn't there a bunch of stuff at E3 to talk about, too, from Xbox?
Yeah, you can cover that stuff remotely. You know, the big thing with E3 is obviously the games. And I don't, you know, honestly, aside from personal
there's
stuff.
There's only really one game that matters. And it's the one with the dog.
Leo, I just ordered $1,250 worth of Xbox One stuff. And what's going to happen is I'm going to play Call of Duty on it.
So we do have an E3 special for those of you who didn't get to E3. We don't, you know, we've gone in the past, but this time we just sent OMG Chad and Lamar Wilson down there, and their coverage is at twit.tv/specials. It's Twit Special number 162 from E3. Great show. Highly recommended if you want to see all the cool games and stuff from E3. I pre-ordered the Xbox One, but I don't know how much money I spent because it just said, we'll let you know.
We'll let you know. Just give us your credit card, Emmer, and we'll let you know how
that goes.
We'll
let you know. I pre-ordered it on Amazon. Now, that's because I wanted the day one edition. If mm-hmm. I had the regular edition, I would get, I could get a price.
Sure.
But
I think it's the same. I think it's the same.
I'm sure it's the same price. But so you can pre-order the non-day one edition, but wouldn't you want the little sticker?
Of course.
Of course you do.
Of
course you do. And we know it's $4.99. We know now also that PlayStation is $3.99. Mm-hmm. But in order not to put Mary Jo completely to sleep, we'll save that conversation for later.
Yay.
And you know, Mary Jo's complete ambivalence to video gaming is amazing to me.
It stuns me. What is wrong with her?
I know. He all during the Xbox One gaming thing on Monday, I kept saying, well, still don't want it. Nope. Still don't want it. Paul's like, what's wrong with you?
Well, and that was all about games on on Monday. So I can understand that. Let's talk about Best Buy, because as soon as I came in, people in the chat room said, he's going to talk about Best Buy. He's going to talk about Best Buy, right? So what happened? I didn't hear.
Just happened. That's why you didn't hear, I bet. It happened just shortly before the show. And Microsoft and Best Buy announced that they're going to have store within a store for Microsoft called the Windows Store in 600 Best Buys in the U.S. and Canada.
Didn't we? I thought we said that would happen before.
Paul predicted this one. Yes.
Somebody said it would happen. I can't think
of
who.
Yeah, somebody.
Who would have known that ahead of time? How did you know that, Paul?
What do you mean?
Sources?
Leo, hi, I'm Paul Thurrott. This is my stock.
Don't you know me by now? You know me, don't you? Well, good. So how big are they going to be? What are they going to be? And the big news, of course, that Dedham will get one July 18th.
I know, isn't that awesome?
How did you find that?
Hi, Mary Jo, I'm Paul Thurrott.
Same way. So, I'm curious.
Same way.
I wanted to know, when the New York stores would be coming, and I haven't heard anything.
I only focused on the important store.
Cool. I don't think we have a Best Buy anymore in our area.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, really?
We used to. I think that one went away. There may be one closer to San Francisco.
This is so much better than their Barnes & Noble store within a store idea, which
yes.
would have been such a huge disaster. Yes. You know?
You can get books. You can get Nooks.
Yeah.
Now you can get everything.
Yeah.
So what are we going to see here? What is it's going to be like the Apple store within the store, sort of?
The Samsung one. Have you seen one of the Samsung's
doing it.
Yeah. So the Microsoft one, though, is going to be significantly bigger. I think that's the big deal.
Yeah.
Well, there's more to sell.
Yeah. They were telling me when you go into these new store within the stores, in the 600 stores that are going to have them, you walk in and there's going to be a Surface table with just Microsoft Surface stuff. There's going to be a notebook table. And then there's in the middle going to be the Best Buy staff picks table where they mix up all kinds of Windows PCs, devices.
Phones.
Could be an Xbox on there.
Xbox. Yep.
It's going to be like a complete showcase for everything Microsoft on the consumer front.
And it's interesting. They're separating the third-party stuff and the Microsoft stuff. They're going to have Microsoft table.
Also, they are agreeing, Apple and Samsung stores, if they're in those Best Buys, are off to the side, and they're not in the main computing department. The computing department becomes the Microsoft.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is a little push them aside. Mm-hmm. We're computers. They're just.
I'm hoping there's going to be some hazing across the aisles. Little towel snaps.
They must have laid some cash on Best Buy to do that.
They did.
Yeah, some significant.
We
cash.
Don't know how much, but and plus they're going to add 1,200 new Microsoft trained reps in these stores. And right now there's only 100 Microsoft trained Best Buy reps in all of the stores in U.S. and Canada.
And it shows.
It does show indeed. So 1,200 more are coming on, and it's starting in June, and it's going to all be rolled out by early September, they're saying. So, yeah.
Great. That's important.
I'm excited,
from the point of view of Microsoft, of course, because it's a showcase for Surface especially.
Well, the big question was always, when is Microsoft going to move more quickly to open more stores and compete more directly with Apple retail stores? Although, honestly, I think while no one was paying attention, that's been ramping up pretty well.
Yep.
But how many retail stores are there now for Microsoft?
They have 68, I asked today, and that includes the little kiosk-sized ones plus the full size.
Yeah. And now 600 Best Buy.
600, yeah.
Wow.
Not bad. And so hopefully as they are doing internationally slowly, they'll do more partnerships with whatever retail giants they have in Europe or elsewhere and do something similar. I think this is really smart. I think this is, and the little prototype they show in the video is, it's nice looking.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about E3. Mary Jo, if you want to. Oh, no, wait a minute. Before we do, one more sop to Mary Jo. Tech Ed.
Oh, right. This is more a question to Mary Jo, I guess. I mean, I wasn't sure. Was there anything? I didn't listen to last week's episode. But, I mean, is there anything Tech Ed related that wasn't covered?
Left over.
No, we pretty much hit everything. We talked about all the servers that are coming out, Server Blue, so Windows Server 2012 R2 and the SQL Server Blue product.
Did you hit on the Essentials server?
No, we did not. You should actually talk about that.
I mean, there's not a lot to say other than I'm a little impressed that they're going forward with Essentials and even expanding it up to the mid-market. And so this is their current small business server product. There's an intriguing kind of thing going on where they're basing it now on standard server. And in R2, across the board for all of the Windows Server versions, you'll be able to install Essentials as a role. and get all of the benefits of Essentials on up to 100 users instead of 25, which is what you get with Essentials, and up to 200 devices. And so that's really interesting. And the other big thing I would say in Essentials is there's a virtual machine option. I'm sorry, a virtual machine install option, meaning that at first boot, you can literally choose between install it right to the hard disk or install Hyper-V Server and then install Windows Server Essentials to the VM. And the reason you would want to do that is because there are various Azure services that either work better or only work with OSs that are in VMs, including recovery services and backup services and so forth, and that this version of Essentials will integrate much more directly with Azure services. So
it's not just a trial thing. It's something you might want to do.
No, it's a completely different kind of install. And when you first hear that, or when I first heard it, I said, I don't understand why you would do such a thing. But because of those unique services that are available when you are in a VM, it turns out that they're actually server makers. I don't mean that these ones especially, but I mean companies like HP, Dell, whoever. I don't know who's going to do this, but apparently some of these companies have expressed interest in installing this OS on their servers in this fashion, and they can provide their own Azure-based services as well, you know, for backup or whatever. So this is kind of a nice value add for small server makers as well.
Cool. All right. We got to do E3. So Mary Jo, we'll just let you look out the window, stare out the window for a little bit.
I'll chime in with some fun non-gaming observation.
Did you see what I did today, by the way, on Twitter? You know, everyone's panties in a bunch over this E3 stuff, and you know, Xbox are doing everything wrong, as well as controversy and everything. And man, it's really beating me down. I mean, it's amazing how just opinionated everyone is about this stuff. And so this morning, in response to someone else's tweet, I wrote, just as a reminder, the GIF graphics format is, in fact, pronounced GIF. just to like set everyone spinning off on a completely different tangent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really funny, like how people.
That is funny.
And after it. It's like little kids following a soccer ball.
Chase it like the schools of fish. Before we do start talking about E3, let me just briefly talk a little bit about our friends at Citrix and GoToMyPC, the best remote access software, cross-platform, easy to use, totally secure, and lets you access your Office Mac or PC not only from any other computer but from your smartphone, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device. That's pretty sweet. Go to my PC. Before you leave the office tonight, visit gotomypc.com, click the orange try it free button, and enter our offer code Windows. You'll have 30 days free. Then put the free software on your mobile device and just head out. Inevitably, somebody's going to say, hey, did you get the Watkins, did you get the email I sent you? Where are my spreadsheets? Where's that PowerPoint slide? Where's our OLAP cubes? And you, my friend, will pull out your iPhone or your Windows phone, and you'll go, no problem. And you'll just go to your office computer. You log into your GoToMyPC account, SSL, so it's encrypted and secure. And it's just like you're sitting at the office computer. You'll send email, receive email, run any program, access any network resource. GoToMyPC.com. Click the try it free button. The promo code is Windows. Get it free for 30 days, and then download the free app to your mobile device. And we thank the folks at Citrix for their support of Windows Weekly. Go to mypc.com. Fast, easy, secure. Go to my PC. Use the offer code Windows. All right, E3. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot to say about E3, I'm sure. And, of course, from Microsoft's point of view, the big story was their press conference on Monday. Do you want to start with that?
Yes. I mean, the way I would put it is that watching the E3 press conference on Monday, I thought they did a very credible job of doing what they needed to do, which was
games.
They also talked about the price, which I already knew. And the
$4.99. We guessed that one pretty right on. Everybody kind of agreed that had to be the price.
Interesting. Okay. So,
right?
Anyway.
No?
Yeah. And I explicitly knew that was
too high?
Price, but no, I knew that was the price. Yeah. That was the price. Yeah. That was always the price.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Well, I know, because you're Paul Theroux. Have I met you? Yes. So you yes, know these things, but we have to learn.
Yes. Well, I wrote about this a while ago, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, the point is they came up with it public. Good. Lots of games, lots of good stuff. I thought it was good. That said, that night, on Monday night, Sony had their own press conference. And, you know, I would like to point out to people that Sony is a company that has been incredibly disappointing for the past decade or so. And I think I talked about this on a podcast a few weeks back, that over the past 10-year period, their electronics division has lost several billion dollars, and that the only thing that's made money for them has been selling insurance to customers in Asia.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the company you want to bet your future on, you know, for video gaming or anything electronics related. But, you know, they did an amazing job marketing against some of the really controversial stuff, truly and truly legitimately controversial stuff.
Well, everybody saw that viral video of how do you share games on the PS4? Yeah. Here.
Sure.
That was on every stream ever. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
No, that was well done. The thing is, you know, not just the E3 press conference, but between the May reveal and continuing past E3, actually, Microsoft has started blogging about the Xbox 360. And aside from some kind of side blogs like the Major Nelson blog or whatever, there really wasn't a lot of blogging from the Xbox team. And so this is kind of a new thing. And every day almost, they publish some information about whatever aspect of the Xbox One. So in recent days, they've talked about the reputation service that's being improved in Xbox Live. They've talked about this notion of smart matchmaking and, you know, here are the accessories we're going to release. And, you know, here's how our game licensing is going to work. And here's how our always on internet connection is going to, you know, why that's going to be necessary and so forth. And they've addressed this stuff head on. But, you know, Sony just did a masterful job of turning it all of the stuff that anyone thinks is negative about the Xbox One, I think they did a really good job of turning it on Microsoft. And so it was the sort of thing where coming out of the Xbox One conference, I thought Microsoft did a very credible job. But then you watch the Sony one and you realize, geez, they really kind of kicked the crap out of them. It was pretty obvious. The PS4 is $100 less. The Xbox One only comes in that one version that bundles Kinect, whether you want it or not. Clearly, that would be a way you could lop $100 off of the Xbox One. Why they don't do that, we don't know. Microsoft previously had plans to sell a $300 version of the console that would require a two-year Xbox Live Gold subscription at $15 a month. They, a month or two ago, got rid of that, which is another thing I think that could have nicely undercut the pricing issues that people have. But there's just sort of a crazy ineptitude of marketing, frankly, from Microsoft, which is something we don't typically associate with the Xbox guys. It's been kind of strange to watch this happen. I mean, this is very, very unlike them. They're the cool guys at Microsoft. You know, they're the ones that have always had a very positive appearance or a reputation with consumers, you know. And so this has been kind of strange. I hope that between now and the release, and not after the release, but before the release, that they fix some of these things. You know, they could debundle the Kinect and offer a version for the same price as the PS4. I think that would be super smart. They could bring back that subscription version. They could rethink some things, like the always-on connection, which, frankly, I think would be a very easy software workaround to accommodate offline situations. You know, just turn off those features that rely on and always on internet connection. To me, that is just really basic, and I'm really surprised they're not doing it. They should also not allow third-party developers to choose whether or not they want to charge customers to sell used games, which is another one of those crazy PR nightmare decisions that they made for whatever reason. So,
you know, I read a post on Reddit by a, you know, random person who claimed to know everything. And a couple of things he said, I don't know, he said, I'm a retailer or something. A couple of things he said that I thought were interesting. He said, don't bet on Sony just yet. Wait till the chips fall. For instance, now, maybe you want to debunk this. He said, there'll for sure be a subsidized, he said, $99 Xbox, as Microsoft did with the Xbox 360. It sounds like you know for sure that that's been, that there's no subsidized.
It was scuttled. Yeah, it was going to be $300.
And which is, there's no point in
there's no way there's going to be a $99 Xbox One. The Xbox One is brand new. It's a premium product. Right. They always come out with a high price point. I actually do think that regardless of all of this controversy, that when the holiday season comes and goes, that Xbox One will either win or it will be kind of neck and neck. And that there is such a devoted, you know, tens of millions of people that love Xbox.
Well, if you're a Halo fan, that's where you're going to go, right?
Yeah, and they're just going to buy it, you know.
Yep. I already bought it. I already pre-ordered it.
Well, I did too. I mean, but I can't. I'm not going to let my own preferences color my judgment.
But I was talking yesterday with a couple of young guys. Henry had a party who are gamers, and they said, "What do you think, PS4 or Xbox One?" And they have not decided.
Yeah. I'm curious how people make these decisions. Well, I hear a lot of people. Yeah. There's a lot of like side by side stats. You know, they'll say, "Well, this has this kind of GPU. This has this kind of GPU. This has this
way." Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And the reason we know that is because we can look back at the 360 versus the PS3, and the PS3 had what many people said were just way higher specs. The Xbox was never going to be able to catch up. I mean, at the time that the PS3 launched, the Xbox only did 720. P video output, and the PS3 did 1080p, and they're never going to catch up to that. And they have Blu-ray, so they can ship much bigger games and so forth. But Microsoft improved the video output to 1080p over time, 1080i first, and then 1080p. They ship games on discs that have multiple discs. You install them to the hard drive, so there's no real issue there. And it's not as convenient, obviously, as having it on a single Blu-ray, although that won't be an issue going forward. But I think there are other things about the 360 that people are kind of underestimating as being very important and forward leaning, and I think are going to be real differentiators. Some of the ability, well, not the ability, the requirement to have something installed to the hard drive of the device. You never need the disc again if that's how you buy it.
I like that.
The ability to buy games online day and date with the release, install that thing, and then share it with everyone in your family on a single Xbox Live Gold account. The ability to go to anyone else's house, sign in, and have access to your entire collection
cool
of
too.
Games.
Yeah.
People have this way of like trying to undercut every little advantage that the Xbox One has, but things like the ability to download a game to someone else's console. People are like, "Oh, like I'm going to wait around for like 18 gigabytes to download." But actually, that's not how it works. It streams down, and you can start playing fairly immediately. I mean, so I don't quite get a lot of the weird hatred. I mean, I think there are PlayStation guys.
That's what I think.
And there are Xbox guys, and these guys, they're going to get what they get.
Guys, yeah.
I'm going to get both, and I'll sort of evaluate them. There's certainly things about Xbox, the platform, that I don't like. I don't like the Xbox Live Gold requirement for a lot of the entertainment services. I think that's kind of a misplaced.
Hey, at least they got rid of points.
Yeah,
right. Thank God. How much is Xbox Gold going to cost? $99 a year still?
It's $60 a year.
$60 a year for one. Oh, yeah, I got the family plan. Will they still have that?
No, but now what they're doing is letting you share one with your family. So you have your
saves me money.
Single Xbox Live Gold. Yeah, everyone in your house can.
And
so you install a game and everyone can play it on their own account, even if they aren't paying for Xbox Live Gold themselves.
One other thing they announced is, hey, if you don't want to be online all the time, there's always the Xbox 360. How long are they going to keep that around? It sounds like they're going to keep it around for a while.
That was poorly communicated. In fact, that was the moment when I saw that I said, okay. These guys don't know what they're talking about. That is ludicrous. That's like saying, if you can't afford the new car with all the great new features, we still sell this jalopy out here that, was big news 8 years ago. But, hey, it's good for you.
Well, they even announced new games for the Xbox 360.
Well, of course. I mean, there will be new games, and not just this holiday season, but next. But that's how these things always go. We have a lengthened life cycle for the 360 and for the PS3.
They're selling a new version of the 360.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a restyled, slightly smaller version, but no new features,
Right. Well, the new feature is if you buy Xbox Gold now, you get two games a month.
Yeah, for a little while, until the launch, which is great. That's a cool benefit. That's sort of a way of waving your hands and saying, "Oh, don't pay attention to all those complaints about Xbox Live Gold."
There's no new console. Yeah. Don't worry. Keep buying the old
Nobody's
one.
Nobody's buying these any. Halo 3 was a huge deal 5 years ago. You'll love it.
Might you buy it for a kid or a second unit in the guest room?
I think it's a nice thing to do. I mean, I wouldn't get too far. I just feel like they've done a bad job of communicating.
Well, really? But, Microsoft? Never.
Well, again, that's not an odd thing to say about Microsoft generally, but there are two things. Like I said earlier, first of all, it's the Xbox guys. They've always been very good
better.
About stuff.
They're
and they're like
guys.
The golden boys. They're the ones that like all this bad stuff's going on, and they're like the Kennedys. No one cares. They're beautiful, but the other thing
that's
is...
good. I like it. First time I've ever heard the Xbox team compared to the Kennedys.
No,
that's
like,
good.
You get to be president.
They're still in the honeymoon period 10 years later. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the other thing is, given what just happened with Windows 8, where these guys are literally doing a mulligan now and bringing back a bunch of stuff that they said they would never have in there and fixing it and releasing kind of a fixed version of it, Here we have the Xbox guys doing, you know, with the same kind of hubris, the same kind of we know best, and you don't have, you know, we know that people want this, even though people are telling us they don't want it. I think that that's bizarre that Microsoft, as a sort of the wider corporate entity, would allow that to happen in the wake of Windows 8. They are literally fixing Windows 8 right now. How could they allow this to happen again with Xbox? It's very strange to me.
Well, there are. Go ahead, Mary Jo.
I want to throw in a couple things here. I don't think they're ever going to do an unbundled version without the Kinect. And the reason is they're telling developers you can count on having a Kinect.
Yeah.
Right. So I just don't even see that as in the realm of possibility, even if all the users say this is what we want. I think that
Would only be for price reasons, right?
I mean, it would. Yeah. It would. But
you could tape over the eye.
Yeah, which a lot of people will probably.
Right. I won't have to. It won't work in my house.
Timing is really bad with this NSA thing because people just say, why should I put an eye in my house? Didn't George Orwell, didn't he already? No. It was 1984. Yeah. About the two-way TV, you know, looking at me.
Yeah.
Somehow we always want Microsoft to come through with that.
Thank you, Microsoft.
I also think on the always on thing, I think they need to do more than tell people that they can shut it off. I think they need to really explain why is it on. And so they've said it's on to check if you're in compliance licensing-wise, right? But there's other reasons that thing is on. And it has to do with the same reason that Connected Standby is on in Windows, which is they're always going to be updating you in the background every hour, checking, adding more, bits to your game, more parts to the games. And they haven't really explained that, I don't think. And so everybody who hears about it thinks, they're just, doing Big Brother. They're checking if I'm in compliance and my licenses are up to date. But if they actually are doing more than that, this is what they need to come out and say and explain. And they really haven't done that very well.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah, there's a real consumer benefit to always on.
There is.
Definitely are, but I don't see, other online gaming services have this notion of an offline mode where, you just don't get those benefits. If you're taking an Xbox up to a cabin in the woods and you have no internet connection, you don't care that there are updates for the console or the game you're playing. You're just playing offline anyway. Who cares?
They've effectively eliminated that as an option. You can't take it to a cabin in the woods. You have to.
I would be shocked if before launch or after that they don't change this.
Interesting.
This is so. It's just a software fix. This is not some weird hard coded requirement. It's something.
Well, but the reason they wouldn't comes back to DRM because you are copying the game to your hard drive. So if you don't need the disk, if it's on your hard drive, and they don't check to the license at some point, maybe it doesn't have to be daily, then piracy is going to be a problem. So what you're saying, Mary Jo, is true.
But you're telling me after 30 days it can't. Here's how Skype works for me. It's very annoying because I have two-factor authentication on with my Microsoft account. Every once in a while, Skype will log me out, and I have to log in. It's kind of a weird manual process, and then it says, hey, enter this code from your authenticator app. And I go and I get it and I enter the code and then I get back into Skype. Why can't the Xbox One say, hey, it's been 30 days.
Right.
You have not gotten online. If you can't get online, click here to get online. And if you can't do it, insert the disk.
Ah, there you go.
I mean, I'm just saying there are ways around it.
That's a good point.
And those ways around it are the ways we do it today.
Right.
I just think there's a way to get around.
Insert the disk is, you're absolutely right, a perfect solution.
Yeah.
Unless there's no disk.
Exactly, which is what they're trying to wean people from. Right?
Aren't they going to be online only?
No, but in the case of there is no disk, by the way, you can't share it anyway. So
that's true.
You just have it. It's on your console. It's yours. Right. I mean, it's inside your account.
Okay.
You can't transfer it, so that wouldn't matter. Yeah.
All right.
In fact, if Microsoft gets their way, everyone will buy games electronically.
Right.
There'll be no sharing, and then this won't even matter.
Right.
You know,
I mean, and that's where they're going, right? Devices and services company. They want games as a service, basically, right? That's kind of where they're going.
Does Windows Phone Home edit periodically? I mean, you could go offline completely with Windows once you've authenticated, right? It never again asks to authenticate, or does it?
Yeah. Well, a normal like a retail Windows installer, one that comes on a PC, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the exception to that would be things like. Volume license versions of Windows or, the Office 365 subscriptions.
But those are used in offices, so.
Those require a ping occasionally.
So it's the little cabin in the woods issue that we're talking
or a
about.
Submarine, as Don Matrix.
I know, what a clueless thing to say.
That was amazing.
That was so bad.
Lots of people have submarines. What are you talking about? Don't you?
He said, I read all the complaints in the blogs, and what it boiled down to was there was one guy who said, I am on a nuclear submarine, and I can't get online. And he said, you know, I can't empathize with that. I would imagine that you would have trouble getting on the internet on a nuclear sub. And I was like, you're going to be kidding me. Like, this is such an insane thing to say.
Deal with it all over again. It really was. It was like, oh, no, are you really going to say that? Yep, you are.
Having dealt with Microsoft and other companies in the past, I know that for these events, which are a big deal and a very high-stress thing for these executives, that they are pummeled ahead of time with talking points.
Right.
And they knew that people were going to ask them questions about this. And I'm sure there was maybe a better way to tell the submarine story or whatever. But, you know, somehow this got into his talking points and he had to kind of blurt it out. And it just, yikes.
Little tone deaf. Well, the other thing that this Reddit post said is be patient. You know, it's ultimately going to come down to the publisher. Mm-hmm. Sony's going to have the same issue in the long run. Publishers want DRM. And it's ultimately going to come down to the publisher. Can a platform like Microsoft or Sony insist on these rules and say, look, this is how it's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, these things are full of DRM. They're always going to be full of DRM.
But Sony, in other words, Sony can't always say, well, we're going to make sure you can always share a disc just by giving it to somebody.
No, they can't
really say that.
Electronic Arts would leave this platform in a second if Sony tried to do something like that.
It's a little disingenuous to imply that, hey, no problem. Because they could easily come up with something similar at any point. I don't know. And the argument is the platforms are so similar. They're both x86.
Yeah.
NVIDIA.
I think these things are incredibly comparable.
I've read somewhere that Sony might have a marginally better graphics subsystem.
I don't think it matters. I mean, I mean that from...
That's what I told this kid. The kid was asking me. Maybe there's it's better, but it's going to look great.
The big complaint against the PS3 was always that they had kind of convoluted developer tools. It was hard, the Shell processor that used in the current generation console was hard to develop for at first, and it takes years before people can take full advantage of new hardware, especially, but just new console in general. You know, the 360 really hit its stride, you know, 3 years ago or so, whatever, when you get the full power of the experience that developers have with that platform and the tools and all that kind of stuff. And these new consoles will have that same kind of lead time, but I think when it's all said and done, just like with the 360 and the PS3, these things are going to be very comparable. I don't think it matters. You know, someone who wants to play Halo...
You can have faster RAM in the Sony, which you do.
Okay, but
how much difference is that going to make?
But that's not how people decide.
Nor how they design games, frankly.
You're not choosing two PCs. You're choosing, I want to play Uncharted. I want to play Halo. I want to play... I want to play not just play Gears of War, but I want... Or not just play Call of Duty, but I want to get all the add-ons first. Well, you want a 360, and the speed of the memory, that does not factor into that decision, ever. You know, that's not how people buy consoles.
$100 difference in price, though, might.
$100 difference in price is tough, yeah.
Is that because Sony's subsidizing? I mean, clearly it's not a much less... Well, I guess the $100 is Kinect. That's the difference.
I don't know what they're doing. You know, their PS3 was very expensive when it came out because of the high cost of some of the components. And this time they were able to come in under Microsoft, which is kind of amazing. So are they just willfully losing money to get market share? I think that's the console business model, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see Microsoft doing a coupon thing at launch, right? Like $100 to spend in the Microsoft store off if you get one or something like that. X number of points. Sure. Oh, no more points. X number of dollars to spend or whatever.
Chat room saying when you spend $60 on a game, which you do,
$100
difference isn't that big a deal.
True.
By the way, if you're a gamer.
Now, I have to say that the other point of the post in Reddit was people focus on the gamer, but that's really not necessarily what drives acquisition of this stuff.
Sure.
Especially with the TV features of the Xbox One, might that make a difference?
So somebody on Twitter said something to the effect of, you know, you have to go through this process with your wife where you explain why you need this thing. And his wife said, you know, you don't need an Xbox 360. And then he explained that life was better with an Xbox One. And I said, you know, you don't technically need a wife either. Right?
Just, really, you know. let's really think about what is expendable in this scenario, okay? You know, I just want to say.
I mean, it just you
think how much more time you'd have for Call of Duty if you didn't have a wife.
Right. And
In fact, while you're getting rid of it, the children just get in the way, too.
Exactly.
Competing pets. For the pets.
Yeah.
Basically, you eat, you sleep, you play games. That's life.
Life is the downtime between the releases of different Call of Duty games.
Like you, Paul, thank goodness I have a job that requires me to buy both.
Right.
Thank That's goodness.
Right, right, right.
I don't have
I
to make
I
didn't
want to buy
choice.
Two of these, honey.
I
have to.
But I did order the Xbox One. I hope that they will. It's so weird on Amazon. You get a ship date, which is wrong, but you get a ship date and a price if you ordered like the normal Xbox One. But if you want the day one Xbox One, they say, we'll let you know.
So they must have changed that because I could swear there was a price on it when I ordered it on Amazon.
No, they don't. It's not even an order. It's like, we'll send you an email when it's available.
I'm pretty sure I ordered it.
Okay, let me show you. This is what I'm seeing right now, and this is what happened to me.
I think what's happened is that's a standard edition. I think what's happened is launch edition.
This isn't even
gone.
I
think they've run out of.
Wait a minute. Additional Xbox Day One consoles now available. It includes a commemorative controller, a token code to unlock the Day One achievement, and premium packaging. That's the one I want.
God damn it.
Damn it. All right. November. Now, and they changed the date now. All right. Let's just order that right away that way. And you're right. I saved 3 cents when I did get it right away.
See?
That's good.
You always went on Xbox Live, Leo.
They changed that. You know, when I wanted, I guess it was because it had sold out.
That could be.
Yeah. So now I have now pre-ordered the Day One edition. I hope I don't get two Xboxes on is November 30th the actual? That's just a dummy date.
I heard early November. They didn't say. They just said November. But Call of Duty, the next Call of Duty is coming out very early in the month. I want to say November 5. Let me look at the calendar.
To always do November 15th announcements for Xbox.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So
it would be, if it's a Tuesday, which it probably has to be, it would be the 5th or the 12th. I bet it's the 5th.
I got six.
But I don't actually.
I just looked at my cart. I have six of them in my cart now. I got to stop clicking that button.
Yeah. Right. This is when this is when we find out how much of a fan you really are.
Yeah. So, folks, don't just keep hitting the button, because each time you're ordering.
When the lights go dark in your office, we'll know that
the order went actually through. Did that for the GizWiz. I was, we were buying stuff from SkyMall, and they had this remote control helicopter. And somehow, instead of entering one, I entered 10, and a case of 10 helicopters came.
Nice.
Yeah, that was an order.
You just have to go to war.
What are you gonna do? All right. Anything else to say about E3, or should we move along? Move along.
I think that's most of it. Is there anything in the chat room we need to address? E3 wise.
Chat room, have you thoughts?
I know people are very excitable about this.
It's been nuts to watch Twitter this week. It's been people are really, it just took on a life of its own.
People are really, really violently opinionated about this.
Really
stuff,
violently opinionated.
Yeah. You know, the truth is, the less important something is, the more people have an opinion about it.
That's well put. Well, but
it's weird how I'm constantly reminded that people feel very strongly about tech-related topics. You know, whether it was the old days, Windows versus Mac, or iOS versus Android, or Linux versus Windows for a little while there, whatever it is. You forget that there are Nintendo guys that just live, breathe, and die.
You do forget that, don't you? What? Nintendo?
But there are. And
I got invited. Nintendo invited me to a press event next week for the Wii U, and I politely declined. I don't feel that I need to cover the Wii U anymore. Am I wrong?
I think they should just call it the Wii Y and move on.
Wii who? Woo woo!
We finally caught up to the other generation of consoles.
Wow.
What are you doing?
No, but see, now we're going to get the emails from all the people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And so, the Sony stuff is very interesting to me because, like I said, just looking at Sony kind of pragmatically, I'm not really sure I would trust these guys too much, generally speaking. And yet, man, there are people like like really violently in favor of this. And, you know, and God love them for that, I guess. I will get both. I mean, I intend to check both of them out and see. And certainly there are PlayStation exclusives, you know, Uncharted, Hard Rain, and so forth that are, you know, things that are not available elsewhere that look fantastic.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Resistance games, for example, the first two at least on the PS3.
How important are exclusives, really? I mean, I guess that's the only differentiator at this point.
As a gamer, I actually kind of hate them. I wish that there were not exclusives, you know?
Yeah, because you don't want to buy two consoles. You want to buy one console. Yeah,
but obviously that's why they do it, so right. You buy their console.
Right. And Microsoft did show, what I can't remember the number, 17, 18 exclusives, 21 exclusives, some large number of exclusives.
Did you notice there was an exclusive that was exclusive to Microsoft? I don't remember which game it was, but there was a game that was coming out on Windows PCs, Xbox 360, and Xbox One only. Like, oh, so it wasn't exclusive to, yeah, and I have a little bit less of a problem with that, but, still, you know.
Yeah.
Was that a Project Spark thing? That make your own game?
No, although that one would probably be in the same. No, yeah. I thought it was a third party game of some kind.
Titanfall. Was it Titanfall? That's what the chat room's saying.
Something like that.
Chat room never is wrong.
Okay.
They watch these things with great attention to detail.
The other thing, too, we should just mention, you know, and we've talked about this in the past, is that the Xbox One is going through kind of a phased rollout. And so the next step is going to be what happens at Build. And I don't mean to say that Build will make or break Xbox One. I don't think it's that serious. But opening this thing up to third-party developers in a very general way, as they may or may not do, I think would be kind of amazing.
And Sony seems to embrace the third-party developer, the independent developer, more so than Microsoft does.
Well, suddenly, right? I mean,
right, all of a sudden. That's right.
Yeah, let's not.
In fact, it's the other, you know, in some ways what happens is Microsoft has backed off, mm-hmm. and Sony has said, yeah, we'll take this.
But okay, so obviously the Xbox One is a completely different hardware platform. It's not backwards compatible with Xbox 360 games, right? I mean, right. It's reasonably understandable. Something simple like, well, what about all my Xbox Live Arcade games that I bought over the years? You know, well, those are Xbox 360 games. Obviously, if you want to continue playing those, you're going to have to keep your 360.
Right.
You know, that thing alone, that little topic, which has gotten kind of thrown to the side because of all this other big stuff, that's actually a huge issue for some people, which is kind of strange. It's like saying, well, you know, I've been using Windows for 10 years, but I just switched to a MacBook Air. So I can still run all my Windows applications, right? You know, and it's like, not without buying Windows and, you know, doing some kind of a virtualization thing or whatever. But I mean, I don't understand why it's not completely understandable that a new platform, a different platform, would not be compatible. I mean, why? I don't understand what the expectation is there. You know, if you move from a Sony PlayStation 2 to a Nintendo GameCube, you don't expect to be able to put the disc in and have it work. It's a different, I know it's from the same company, but it's a completely different platform.
If it wasn't called Xbox something, I think they would get it more, right? Like, it would be more acceptable. It was like, if you didn't call it Xbox One, you called it, like, the Y box. And be like, oh, yeah, of course you can't play Xbox games on the Y box, right? As dumb as that sounds, I think that would have made a difference. And you know, on Build, I'm actually thinking the Xbox story at Build is probably going to be one of the biggest parts and most interesting parts of Build.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
Because, so there will be Xbox content at Build?
There will. There definitely will. Hmm. It's on, like, when you see the Build site, you can see what things they're going to talk about. And Xbox is very prominently up there. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they say about what the gaming platform is for the Xbox One, like for developers, like what the developer story is and the tools, right? And they're going to talk more about the operating system.
They do need to
talk
about tools, yeah.
Right, they have to. The SDK, I would think they would have to talk.
It'd be nice if it worked with Studio, right? If it were.
Yep. So I think actually, that's, you know, I'm not that into Xbox, but that part of Xbox, I'm actually pretty interested and excited to see what they have to say.
It's x86. You got to take advantage of it.
Xbox and excited in the same sentence. I heard
it. I know. Developers. Who said that?
No, but it is. It's x86. It's really running on Windows. It's a PC as much as anything else. Sure.
You should just be like the original Xbox, by the way. I'm kind of intrigued that they went back to
their roots. Back to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. I loved that original Xbox.
Yeah. Those things will be kicking around for a lot longer than the 360.
I think so.
They were so well made. They're just like, they literally are tanks. I mean, they're just metal, really wonderfully made.
I hacked mine, of course. We did that on the screensavers. Yeah. We put the ROM on it and had a big hard drive in there. And I have like 80 games or something on my original Xbox.
I did the same. And that Xbox I later gave to a friend. And he still has it. He's moved on to 360.
My nephews are playing with it. Although they now have a PS3. But for a long time, that was their game machine.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe I can get it back.
That Armageddon's going to happen, and those things will still boot up and play.
The cockroach is the game machine.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just going to take a break, come back with more Paul Theroux, Mary Jo Foley, talking about Microsoft, talking about Windows. Let's talk right now about how you share files in business. This is not, an obvious subject. I know there's a lot of solutions out there, some very popular consumer solutions. But you may be in a business that security and privacy are important. The control of the document is important. And I think that is the message of ShareFile. ShareFile is a Citrix product because that means that ShareFile is going to work great. It's going to be totally secure. It is the way to send documents, big documents even, confidential documents, to control those documents. And it's great for your recipients. I don't talk about this quite enough. Instead of an email attachment, your recipient will get a link. They click the link, they'll see a page with your logo on it. They don't have to sign up for anything. They have a download link. It comes, if there's multiple files, in a convenient zip file that they can double click and open. It really couldn't be easier to use for you and for the recipient. And I think that's important. Sharing files is a big part of business these days. Sending contracts to a customer, spreadsheets to your accountant, presentations. I use ShareFile every single week to send audio to the radio stations that I'm on, ads and hello, my name's Leo, things like that. ShareFile, I've tried them all, and ShareFile is the easiest way to work with these radio stations. They're not super sophisticated. And so a lot of times, it works for somebody who knows, who's a techie, does not work for ShareFile. I want you to try it today, absolutely free right now, if you visit ShareFile.com. There's a little trick here. There's a big green button that says try it free for 30 days. Don't jump at that one. Up at the tippity top, little fine print, it says radio listeners, click here. It should say podcast listeners as well, because that's the microphone I want you to click, the green microphone at the very top of the page. And this will give you a special window that lets you choose the business that you're in, which is important, and use our offer code, Windows, which is even more important. ShareFile.com. Just try it free for 30 days. That's my request to you. And if you like it, let them know. Let them know, hey, I heard it on Windows and Weekly, and I just think it's great. Free trial for 30 days. The best way. You can password protect the files. You can say how often, how many times they can download it, for how long, all of that stuff. ShareFile.com from Citrix, of course, part of their suite of apps and tools for business that really make a huge difference. Thank them for their support. ShareFile.com. Paul Theroux, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Windows. I just checked, have three Xbox Ones ordered, so I'm going to cancel that. But I want the day one. Did you get the day one, Paul?
Yes.
I want the day one. Just so people know, hey, I don't think there's going to be a red ring of death. Honest. It is kind of foolish to buy the first.
I don't really care if anyone else knows about it. it's not like something I get for others.
But you get the achievement.
I'm gonna order it day one, so that's the
achievement unlocked.
You want that? You want that? Let's face it.
If there are points associated with it.
Now I was looking, of course, at the WWE. Yeah, you need points. Yeah. I want points. I was looking.
How else would you play video games?
All right. What's the if it's not to, if you're not at 11 prestige, then there's no reason. iOS 7. Should point out this is just the pre-release. First look.
Most of the stuff that people, So there's been go figure, but within the Apple world, there's been some kind of controversy as well.
It is absolutely hideous. I'll say it.
You hate it.
I don't really.
Oh, I wondered.
It looks like Nicki Minaj designed it. It's
all right, but you're talking about the color scheme. Pastel
style.
Colors. Okay. To me, that stuff can change. And honestly, I don't care too much about iOS. But I'm looking at this from the perspective of, we knew that Johnny Ives was taking over the design of the software. We knew that he was going to push it into a flat thing.
Influenced by Metro, we thought, right?
Right, get rid of the skeuomorphic stuff,
right.
Which I think most people celebrate.
I'll tell you one thing. There's only two live tiles, the calendar, which has always been live, and the clock. They made all this big deal about weather. There's no live tile.
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
iOS, yeah.
iOS 7.
So I think a lot of people assumed it was going to be a blatant Windows Phone ripoff. And if you listened, if you're familiar with Windows Phone, you listened to this presentation like I did, you hear a lot of the very familiar language. By the way, they even uttered the phrase, I don't think for the first time, but they uttered the phrase fast and fluid, which almost caused me to spew coffee.
Is that a Microsoft term?
Yeah.
Really?
Did they say reimagined? They probably
no, they didn't say reimagined, at least not to my knowledge. Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. So that's bizarre because that one is so tainted by Windows 8. I can't believe they said that. But they talked about Swiss design. They talked about grid layouts. They talked about good typography. I mean, these things are, you hear that? Yeah, I hear that anyway. People who know the Windows Phone stuff hear that. And they're like, yep, here comes Windows Phone. And, you know, ultimately what they came out with was something that certainly has some elements of the Windows Phone stuff, big fonts.
It was really WebOS, I think, more than anything.
I hear that. I don't actually think that's true. So
multitasking was.
Right, the card thing. But that's just one. That's not, right. I mean, Windows Phone has the same UI. I mean, whatever.
There was a lot of Android in there.
Yeah, sure. I think the slide down, slide up stuff where it's like a control panel or navigation center, whatever, very Android-esque, fine. I think I have personal preferences for that kind of stuff. Like, I think the weird translucencies, which they grew out of in Mac OS X and Microsoft went through their own weird phase in Windows, they're back with it in iOS, and I think that's a mistake. But I think they will mature that as people complain about it, and I don't really care anyway. So, but I think the big point from our perspective here on Windows Weekly is that we were expecting kind of a whole-scale Windows Phone ripoff, and I didn't really see that, although people have gone to great lengths to make screenshot galleries showing these screens side by side, but they're like, look, this looks just like this. Look, and certainly there are some elements, like the lock screen is a good example, where it looks a lot like the Windows Phone lock screen, but I agree with you that the color scheme is terrible. But I don't, the other thing is, a lot of the UIs that they have are starkly white. And one of the things we know from like OLED, well, they don't have OLED displays, but I know on OLED, like a white display burns the battery really fast.
Yeah, not on LCD. And I think that's probably the reason they chose it, because Samsung and the other OLED manufacturers, including Windows Phone, where it's OLED, are going for those black backgrounds because it does save battery.
It actually saves battery because they don't have to display
LCD.
Yeah. So
might as well look different, bright, light, cheerful,
but it's
candy land. It's candy land.
It's too white is the way I would say it. I think it was a joke video that described iOS 7 as the whitest iOS release, which has kind of a funny domain. But do
you guys really think they'll change, though? I mean, Apple's not known for listening to customers, right?
No, they're not going to change. I mean, that's it.
No, it's going to be the way it is, right? Like, this is it. Like, you're seeing it as a preview, but this is it.
There will be fixes. There will be other changes. But I'd be
shocked not to see some, like, for example, that Control Center UI. Like, if there wasn't at least an option to make that opaque.
I don't think so. I just think it's so ugly. I agree, but they spent a lot of time and energy. And by the way, a lot of CPU cycles for that live transparency. Mm. And that's
so important, to have
a huge commitment.
Because I got to know this stuff is floating behind there like a cloud or something.
No, they're not going to back down on that one. Crazy. You have to understand, all you have to remember is designers are dictators. When you go to a designer, they say, no, you have no taste. Sure. Let me do it. I have taste. I know what looks good. You don't. You can't tell a designer, if you're a layperson, that doesn't look good. They'll say, well, you're wrong. You're a layperson. I'm a designer. Johnny Ive is a designer with a capital D. Sir designer.
You're talking to the choir here. We've had our own little dictators and a similar design. And, unlike Apple, in the past, Steve Jobs typically would come out and say, look, we made this beautiful thing. Look at it. And people would ooh and ah. There would be no questioning it. Steve Jobs, it's good.
Yeah.
On the Windows side, what we see is some of the Albert Shums of the world, the designer people, talk about how this is really good design. Here's why this is really good design. Oh, God, is this good design. Oh, my God, this design is so good. Listen, you don't know anything about, you're not a designer. You don't know. Right. But you're going to use it, and maybe you hate it. But here, let me tell you.
Why
this
you're
is
wrong.
Beautiful design. You are so wrong. If you just use it, you will recognize this as good design. And it goes on and on and on. And after a while, it's like, yeah, you know, people don't necessarily like this. I don't know. Are you sure that's good design? I mean, I'm not a designer, but
traditionally, Windows was always a function over form, I thought. Yep. And Apple was very much form over function, or actually Apple's point of view was, well, form follows function. So you don't, you know, don't worry about function because we got the form and it's beautiful.
I mean, that's why so many design oriented people are hating on the start button thing on Windows 8.1, right? They're like, no, it's going to make the screen look ugly.
Right.
That's amazing. It's going to help people find things.
Mm-hmm. I love that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the thing that Windows can bring to the world is choice. And that's the mistake they made in Windows 8. And that, you know, if you look at some of the Metro UIs that some people like apparently find beautiful, like the Mail app or something. My attitude is, you know, there should be a checkbox in there where I can have those toolbars just be on all the time. You know, I don't understand why I have to do some action to make them slide up from the bottom of the screen. Like, they just put them there. It's a productivity app. I can handle a toolbar.
Now, you know? Big win for Microsoft. It was kind of glossed over, but Siri is going to start using Bing as its web search.
Yeah.
That's the beginning, I think, of the binging of iOS, I would guess.
The binging of the iOS.
Binging. Binging.
The binging.
Binging. iOS 2, the binging.
The binging. Tough word.
I think that was a really interesting part of that announcement. And, of course, a lot of hate from a lot of Apple fans on that one. But, you know, think about it. If you're Apple, who do you hate more, Microsoft or Google right now? Yeah, tough choice, right?
But if you're an Apple user, though, I don't think those guys hate Google, you know?
Right.
And if any of them have used Apple Maps, I'm sure they're kind of jonesing for Google a little bit.
I would love to know how much Microsoft paid to do this.
Well, that's the point. I think Dvorak made that point on Sunday that this is Siri is a partner deal. Actually,
it's a partner deal. And it's, so it's was whoever, a really smart partner deal.
Yeah.
Awesome partner deal for Microsoft, right? Like they need more people using Bing to improve it and increase its accuracy, relevance, and all that. So that, how do you do that? You get it on a really popular platform, right?
Yeah, except it's Siri, which I don't know.
I know. Well, I think the way it works, the way I've read that this is going to work is if you use Siri and you ask a question, if it doesn't have the answer pre-programmed in, then it goes out to the web, right? And instead of the default engine being Google, it's Bing.
That's how Siri works.
Google.
If I say, you know, what did Mary Jo Foley have for breakfast? Right. Siri will say, well, let me search the web for that. In this case, the web results will be Bing. Just as if you say, what's 18 times 12?
If she had an Xbox One, it could just use Kinect to look at what Mary Jo is having for breakfast.
As a matter of fact, we know the answer to that question. We know everything she's ever eaten.
Ever.
So that's a win for Microsoft.
There's a bizarro future world where Apple licenses Siri to Microsoft, and then we have to deal with Siri and Windows. Can you imagine?
What do you think of that new Mac Pro, by the way? There's an example of designers winning.
Pointless. You know, actually, I will tell you why that machine is pointless in a way that I think anyone will agree. Even people who literally are waiting to put the whatever it is on their credit card to pay for it.
Yeah, I'll probably buy one because it's pretty, but it's not practical.
Of course. But here's the problem with it. You can't share the prettiness of that with anyone.
Right.
Right? Like when you buy an Apple device, you bring it out in the world, people see it. That's the half the point of having an Apple device is so people can see that you have it. This little black trash can thing sits behind your computer in your office where no one's ever going to see it. You would have to be insufferably self-centered and go out and tell people, show people pictures of it. You have to.
Can I show you my computer?
Like, what kind of a loser would do that? Like, this is a device from another age. I cannot believe they made this thing.
Well, this is where, in my opinion, this is designers. By the way, you know, in the Isaacson biography of Jobs, one of the things in the very earliest days, you know, normally computers are designed square because what happens is the engineers design, have the first pass at a design, and they do stuff square because, of course, it's a square motherboard. You got a top and a bottom. It's just the sensible, from an engineering point of view, way to stack stuff. And then you get a square box. And Jobs, in this book, talks about how he said to the engineers, no, we want the Apple II to have a curved, beautiful line. So we're and then on with subsequent designs, including the iMac. We're going to tell you, the designers are going to tell you how you engineer.
You know,
and
what the,
boy, this is it writ large.
So there's two things about this. One, I believe that this, first of all, this is not a Mac Pro. if anyone who was buying Mac Pros was buying it for its infinite internal expandability and ability to swap out cards and all that, this is not that.
People who use Mac Pros wanted the old Mac Pro.
Yep. With new stuff in it.
New stuff. That's really what they want.
You know, so, okay.
This is the world's most expensive home theater PC is what it is.
Sure. No, but the other
thing. I can't wait to use it for that.
I think you'll agree with this one as well. I don't think Steve Jobs would approve this.
No way.
This is a thing that Apple under Steve Jobs would have released 5 or 6 years ago. But presented with this hardware today, I have to think he would have said no. I cannot believe he would have.
It reminds me a lot of the things Apple did under John Sculley. It was kind of, we'll see. But
I just don't care about it. I think it's pointless.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Lots of beautiful things are pointless.
If I happen to be flush when it comes out.
Supermodels, Leo, for an example of a beautiful pointless thing.
Now, Paul, nothing wrong with supermodels.
No, I know.
Nothing wrong with them. They're nice.
But at least those you can cart around. You know, you can't bring
you
them
show people.
You can't put like a little fur on it and bring it to dinner. You gotta.
Oh, I will.
You could.
I will. I'll carry it with me everywhere. It's only 8 inches. It's little. I could put it under my arm.
It looks like a little trash compactor, right?
There's so many fun things that people are doing, like cats curled up in there.
I would throw trash at that thing all day long. That would be all I would.
I'm definitely buying one. Even though I know it's going to be $4,000 or $5,000, it's going to be ridiculously expensive. It has to be. It's extruded aluminum.
Someone is going to put a battery on it and a screen and God help anyone who brings this to an event that I'm at. I can already see it happening. They'll pull like a monitor out of their bag and then they'll pull like a plug in.
First date. I can't wait. And what you do is you watch the supermodel, and if she looks at that and goes, "Hey, nice computer," you're in. If she goes, what the hell are you carrying a trash can around for? You move on.
There's no way anyone's going to look at that and think it's a computer, for one thing. What is that, an air freshener? Do I squeeze it and get lotion out of it?
Pump the top.
Like, where's the soap? Why are you getting my computer?
Now, I say this as a guy who bought the Cube and loved it.
The Cube was beautiful.
This is just the Cube.
Yeah, I know. But the Cube came out 5 or 6 years ago.
And the Cube was a flop.
Because it was too expensive. And but I mean,
cracked.
It is. Okay. For the same reason that the Cube didn't make sense in its day.
Enough Apple. Let's talk about Windows 8. God knows that's the first time you'd ever hear me say that. But that's that's where we've come to. What's new with Windows 8.1? Actually,
Mary Jo just opened something on her computer and I got brighter. I don't understand what is going on with these displays.
I know.
How does that happen?
I know. It's bright white.
I'm putting you back into movie mode. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's so weird.
I know. It's very susceptible to whatever I open, I think.
How does that, what are you, magic? What is
magic?
I don't even understand how that's possible. All right.
And now I'm red.
So one of the things Apple announced was tags in Finder, which is reminded me quite a bit of smart libraries. It felt like it's a way of saving
the future is tagging. The future is tagging.
Oh man, Facebook's doing it too. Everybody's tagging.
I remember Microsoft was talking about some kind of a version of their search functionality back when it was like only on the server, and that what they were saying was that if users took the time while they were saving documents in Word to also add tags. That would help.
No, but they're not.
Them find stuff, and I'm like, no one is going to.
They're not going to do that.
No one has ever added a tag to a document. That's insane.
No, crazy talk. We know what the next step would be, and a good logical step, and I think doable is auto tagging some sort of software. You know, Google Plus.
You know what
we
need. You know what we need is a little Clippy guy to say, hey.
Clippy.
It looks like you're trying to write an article about whatever.
would you like
me to auto tag it?
Yeah.
With whatever.
I see you're writing a list.
Right. It looks like you're trying to kidnap somebody.
Yeah.
Would you like some help?
I see you're writing a ransom note.
I think you could get more than that for this person.
Now, is there a rumor that libraries are going to go away in Windows 8.1? I see a link on here.
Yeah. So as it turns out, the way it's going to work is they're moving away from libraries. So libraries will still be available in Windows 8.1. But
it's so funny because it took so long for me and others to grok it. Started in Windows 7. Now I love it. And they're going to take it away.
Semi-embarrassing to admit, but after playing a lot, you know, for years with libraries, because libraries debuted in Longhorn or in Windows Vista. The truth is, when I install Windows for the first time on any computer, one of the first things I do is I go into each of the four built-in libraries and I remove the second of the two locations.
Right.
And meaning that, you know, for
it's just
documents,
a folder now.
For example,
yeah.
It's my documents plus public documents.
Right.
I don't want things spread out in that fashion. And I essentially, of course, I use libraries because they're built in, but I'm just using one location. So it's
really
no
just
different.
A smart folder. Really,
it's not even a smart folder.
It's a dumb folder. Yeah. So, are they going away in 8.1?
So, not exactly. If you have a Windows 8 or RT machine and you upgrade it, obviously those things pull forward. If you start a new user, though, they're not created by default.
Oh,
and,
wow!
And you can add them, but you know you have to do it yourself. And the default view in the UI, as you can see in the screenshot, is to not show the libraries in that navigation pane, like we see.
Kind of a shocker.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess that's
it was one of those ideas. They were going to do virtual folders for everything. Longhorn, if you remember, was going to have this built in the FS search stuff. And the idea was that you don't have to worry about the file system.
Right.
And so you would have this view that they would call documents that would just be all of the documents on your computer, no matter where they were. Everything would be virtual. And they kind of backed off from that. Libraries grew out of that. There was a lot of virtual folder functionality that was still kind of built into Longhorn or Windows Vista, rather, because it was going to be part of that Longhorn platform. But nobody really knew about it or cared about it or used it too much. And, you know, Zune was one of the few software products that actually created its own library. It created a podcast library for you when you installed the software. But it just never really coalesced into anything interesting, I guess. Now that I've said that, by the way, there are people who use libraries that love libraries. And
they're going to be...
An effigy of me because I've said that
it's not going away. It's just not by default.
Yeah, you'll still be able to do it.
That makes sense. For those who want them, you can make them. For those who are confused by them, they're gone.
And I think most people, frankly, were confused.
It's a very understandable urge, though, to do something better than the file system. I mean, both Microsoft and Apple have been talking about something for years, and nobody's come up with what that might be.
They've come up with little half steps, you know, and
got iOS, which you have no access to the file system. You just have documents stored by applications.
Trust me, this is the goal. This is, you know, you kind of see it in RT where they're, you know, they're pushing us toward ever simpler file system stuff. So,
portrait mode.
Yeah, they're going to fix portrait mode in Windows 8.1. They've said so that. Especially on smaller devices, which is when you really want it, like the 7 and 8 inch tablets, you'll be able to actually use it in portrait mode, and it won't look so weird. Like
what happens
it
now?
It looks
it doesn't
bizarre.
Work.
No, right?
It's just terrible. Yeah, the problem is most Windows screens are widescreen, so when you turn it on its edge, you've got this really weird kind of tall screen.
Right.
And so the start screen works, but it's very thin.
It's long.
It still scrolls horizontally.
Yeah.
You know, most apps look terrible in this mode. I mean, there are a couple of exceptions, I guess, but it's just not really optimized for it. And I think the push toward like not 4x3, but maybe what do they call it? Not quite 4x3 screens, but screens that are less widescreen, like a 16x10 qualifies will help. You know, and you could have Kindle apps or whatever that you know might look okay on those kinds of screens. I don't know. I need to see one. So hopefully within a couple of weeks, especially on a smaller device, we'll be able to check that out and see what it means.
Firmware updates for Surface RT and Pro coming up this year. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of them. We're getting
this month,
them every month now.
This month,
yep. Yeah, so they made these part of this month's patch Tuesday. And
we got them already.
Yeah, we got them. If you go get them, you've got them now.
I'll go get them.
They did a thing where the Surface Home button driver update is now making sure that when you click on the button, the first time you click on it, it wakes up, which has been a problem on some RTs. And then they added a bunch of new function keys for the touch cover and the type cover, some shortcuts and navigation improvements. Both of those are also on the Pro, as well as some new enhancements for the LifeCam driver on the Surface Pros so that they work better in low light and are more reliable when you're switching from the integrated camera to the external camera. So, yeah, it's great. Every month we're getting updates on our Surfaces, which is really awesome. And nice to see on the Surface blog this week, they actually started talking about these updates instead of us just like discovering them and trying to figure out what we're getting.
Did they actually do that?
They did. Brian Hall, okay, who's the GM there now, he did a post about, hey, we've been giving you some updates for your Surfaces. In case you were wondering what's in these things, here's what they are. So that's good. Yep. Keep going, Microsoft.
How many reboots did the RT firmware one require of you?
I know. There are some people complaining about all the reboots that you needed because of, when you're installing it. I think I had two reboots for mine. I don't really care.
I don't know.
Do you care? I just am happy I'm getting the functionality. It boots.
It boots so fast. But it is kind of odd that they had to do it twice.
Yeah.
Sometimes in Windows, there are these cascading updates. Right. And so that to get to the firmware update that she was talking about, you have to install this other stuff first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's life. Yeah. It boots so damn fast. Who cares?
Yeah.
A minute, 2 minutes later, you're done.
Yeah. Mine downloaded 15 Patch Tuesday updates, then it rebooted, then I got the firmware update, and then it rebooted.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't see that's a problem. It was a big problem when Windows took 3 minutes to boot, but not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Windows Everywhere. This is an ad?
Yeah.
Should we watch it?
Yeah, watch it. It's actually a really good ad.
No.
Does it have Seinfeld in it?
There's no dancing.
Any churros?
Right. Are there any dancers?
No churros.
Or?
No churros. No clicking, dancing. I did hear that they're going to do a new click ad. Well, let's watch this first and see. See what they do. This is Windows Everywhere.
Start with the first browser built for touch. Add the only search engine that allows you to ask your friends on Facebook. Now let's give you a way to call anyone and access your photos and documents from anywhere. Play games, music, and movies from Xbox, and choose from over 50,000 apps to make it your own. Now bring it all to life with Windows, and use it on your Surface, your PC, or your phone. That's the new Windows. One experience on every device for everything in your life.
You're right. Really good ad.
You know, this software sounds so awesome. How come people complain about it so much?
That's the way to show it off. Much better than playing ping pong with your butt.
Although that was funny, but...
Funny, but not kind of convincing.
I like the makeup one a little better, but I see.
No, that's good. I like that. That says... That's very good.
And you know what's crazy about this ad that their PR people told me? This is the first time Bing, Surface, and Windows have all been shown in one ad. Like every other time, it's been an ad for Bing and then an ad for Surface. And it's great. It's like, hey, we have all these things. We have all these assets. We have, IE and we have Bing and we have this and that. And hey, guess what? They all come from Microsoft. It's amazing they've never said that in one ad before.
Right. I am going to be the bad guy and bring up one minor point.
First touch browser.
No. Well, that's true too. But I wonder how important... I understand it's the same experience across phone, tablet, and desktop. But it's not the same software. It's not the same operating system. It's not the same apps.
Right. It's not.
Right.
That's a little confusing.
Yeah.
They could have added Xbox wasn't in there, was it?
Because
Xbox
it wasn't.
Has very similar UI as well. And they should have added
it. And it is a selling point. It's the same UI across all platforms. I guess you don't, you're certainly not in that ad going to say, but by the way, applications sold separately or whatever it is.
Yes, yeah. But, applications across platforms are completely incompatible.
Right.
Some apps are not available on all platforms.
But the selling point is and it's what Apple said about iOS, you already know how to use it. You already know how to use it because you use it on the desktop and you use it on your phone and you use it on your tablet.
That's what I wanted to say about iOS. The one thing that I feel like they kind of blew was they left the whack-a-mole UI in place, right? So it's all, it's got an animated background like Android, and it's got like pastel colors like my Easter eggs, but it still has like that same grid of icons thing,
Oh, they have not made a change, and that's, what is it now, six-year-old technology, and everybody else is going beyond.
Remember that day, they said, they were comparing themselves to Android, and they said, most people running Android are in fact running a version of Android from 2010, and everyone kind of cut it off.
Right.
And my comment to that was, but every single person who's running iOS is running an OS that looks like it came out in 2007. It's exactly the same.
It's the same.
And this new version is not going to change that.
Yeah. There are some people, less sophisticated users, who really like that simple grid. And I think Apple's just decided, we don't want to get too complicated.
And for people, you know, there's on Samsung Android phones, there's a simple home that's just a grid.
Right.
You know, it has some widgets, but it's very simple, big icons.
This is the same UI that like children's activity centers have.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
When it's you a busy lock box. Them into a little seat and they kind of they can move in a circle, but they can't do anything else.
Yeah,
that's iOS.
Yeah,
you know.
So, but you don't have a choice on iOS. It's got to be that way. But you do have a choice because there's Windows Phone, there's Android phones, there's there's even BlackBerry phones. And
Apple should advertise that part of it. You have a choice. You know,
we believe in choice. We believe in choice. No, I like that. That Windows Everywhere is really good. I think that's really good. I don't want to parse it in too much detail. It's just it makes you feel good, and unlike the click ad, which apparently only sold the fact that it makes a click noise, this actually talked about real things that you can do.
Although the click noise arguably is the Surface's greatest achievement.
That's a very sad statement.
Click in.
Yeah, that's a sad
the disclaimer
statement.
On that one is the click noise requires an accessory you have to buy separately, by the way.
Yeah. Not anymore, right? Don't they bundle it now?
Yeah, for a little while.
For a little while. Because nobody was... Yeah, nobody. I mean, that's the real price is that plus $129 clicky keyboard. HP is a little worried. They ought to be. But not for the reasons they're worried. They're worried the end of support next year for XP is going to hurt PC sales.
No, they think it's going to help.
Think that's going to help? Well, whatever. I don't know.
So it's still kind of weird.
I don't think people know. What's going on in that regard? Do they?
Microsoft's been doing a lot to try to educate people about this. You know, that as of April 2014, there's no more updates, including security fixes coming for Windows XP. They've been warning people for like 2 years, I think, about this, maybe longer. But yeah, I know there are still people who don't know. And HP's point seems to be, you know what? We don't think Windows 8's really going to take off until all these people who are in panic mode about the end of support for XP are going to all start running out and buying new PCs. I don't know. I think the people I know who are on XP are either really cheap and aren't going to go out and buy a bunch of new PCs, or they are people who are just using whatever their corporations give them. And, you know, they're not the kind of people who are going to go to a store and go out and buy a new machine. So I don't know. I'm hard pressed to think this is really going to be the big windfall thing that HP is saying they think it is going to be.
I completely misunderstood that story. I don't know why
I thought it would be bad.
I
labeled that wrong.
No, I don't know why I thought it would be bad for sales. Of course, it's going to promote sales to some degree.
Yeah, to some
degree.
I don't think it's making a big difference.
A lot of these guys are running XP or whatever on pretty new hardware. You know that they're just.
It's going to be great for Windows 7 sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Can you still buy Windows 7?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yep.
And remember that a lot of these corporate, by the way, the guys who are all running XP are volume license customers.
Right.
They have their option of
they can do whatever they want. Yeah.
Right. And they can downgrade, upgrade. They could do whatever they want. If they want Windows 7 and not Windows 8 and it's next year, it won't matter. They can just do Windows 7.
But it's not going to help sell more HP computers.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Did they tell, was this in a quarterly report or something? Is this like the forward-looking statement?
No.
Things are going to turn around for us.
Yeah, I think they just said it.
We see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Thank God, finally. XP is going out of service. This is going to be huge.
This is going to save the PC.
The PC industry is back.
Boy. Why didn't Microsoft do this sooner?
I know. Yeah.
As your services multiply like bunnies, says Mary Jo Foley.
No, that was Paul.
Paul says that. I should know. Anytime it's something like that, it's always Paul.
Wow.
Always Paul.
Well, my Azure story this week is about what they call like multi-authentication, multi-factor authentication, I guess, which they're adding to Windows Azure. When I read the description of it, what it sounds like is they're adding it to Office 365 as well, but I don't believe that to be the case. I think what this is for connections to Windows Azure from other services, including, you know, Office 365. So if you're familiar with the two-factor authentication feature they have now in the Microsoft account and thus on consumer services like, SkyDrive and Outlook.com and so forth, they're adding this to Windows Azure for for companies that are hosting whatever corporate resources they have on Azure. So you actually have to pay for it. And it's kind of a transaction fee, you know, per user per month and all that kind of stuff. What I'm hoping to see, I think in some ways this is an important capability, but I would like to see all of Microsoft's online resources have this kind of multi-factor authentication, you know, like Office 365 should have this. And I'm kind of curious why they don't. But maybe someday they will. I assume they will.
Yeah.
It's probably just you.
No one else wants this. Well, the thing is, you know, using my phone is not problematic enough. And so what I'm hoping is that I have to like security prompts from Google and Microsoft every single day, like all day long. I'm always entering codes and I can't do anything online without my phone anymore.
I love that two-factor.
I love stuff. That it's yeah. there, but I mean, I think we got to get to the point where the fingerprint stuff happens and facial recognition or whatever it is. Because, and like I mentioned earlier, in kind of a non sequitur form, you know, the Skype thing really bugs me. I don't quite understand it. It's the one piece of the dual factor stuff that just seems to trigger like routinely. And it will, and in fact, it triggers so much that it will sometimes say, hey, you've tried to log into your account too many times. Here's a CAPTCHA. And once I get through it, which takes like 12 tries, and now you can change the password on your primary account, which, by the way, screws up every single device in my office because they're all logging into the same account. And it's just kind of it's a little depressing that it can't be more seamless than it is.
I haven't seen that. So you're getting it how often?
In Skype?
Yeah. More than
I would
frequently.
Say every couple of days. Yeah,
that's broken. Yeah. Something's broken.
Yeah, something's not right. I think part of the problem is when I went to New Orleans, in fact, I know my computer was on. It wasn't, I don't think it was logged in, but I suspect what was happening is I changed my password while I was away, and I have a machine in the cellar and this one that probably was logging in the old way. And I'm sure what was happening is they kept trying and it wasn't working for some reason. And so finally, you know, Skype on my laptop said, oh, no, there'll be no more of you. And you can get through it, but, you know, sometimes it asks you for the authenticator code, which is easy. Sometimes it does the CAPTCHA thing.
That's annoying. It should only once you have two-factor, it should always use the authenticator, period.
Yep, I agree.
And that's always a problem with two-factor authentication, is re-authenticating. It's inconvenient. That's the nature of it.
Yep.
That's the nature of it. I find myself going to Microsoft's site and generating passwords for stuff that doesn't understand the authenticator. And that's
by the way, I think from a typical consumer standpoint, you know, you obviously want to do the right thing online. You've heard about this. You enable this extra security feature. That's fantastic. Every once in a while, you get into some situation where you log in with your Microsoft account somewhere in an app, maybe, whatever it is, and it says, nope, incorrect password.
Right.
You're like, that's weird. I'm pretty sure I typed that in correctly.
Right.
And you do it again. It's like, nope.
Yep.
And the app doesn't know about the dual factor.
Right,
so
right.
What you need to do is go generate that app password, but you don't know that. And
exactly. Until you've entered it three times very, very carefully, and then you go,
I know what to do. I mean, I know what to do. But I wonder about normal people that aren't kind of involved with technology all day long and how they would ever figure that out. I really don't know.
But they don't. Fortunately, two-factor is not turned on by default. And presumably, if you turn it on, you're sophisticated enough to realize that.
Presumably.
No, it's weird. And I was just bit by it the other day. I had a new phone or something. I can't remember what. And,
yep.
Oh, it was oddly enough, it was the 928. And I had to put in, to authenticate my Outlook account, I had to use this to, I would have thought it's a Microsoft product and a Microsoft login that it would have known.
Here's one. You just reminded me on the phone. You can try this yourself at home. It's fun. Enable two-factor. Log into your phone, obviously, do all that stuff. Install the SkyDrive app, and then you type in your password, and it says, oh, you need to type in the code from your authenticator app. So you go, you switch out of the app, you go back to authenticate code, you're like, okay, I got the code in my head. It's like 266192. Okay,
quick.
And then you go back to SkyDrive, and then the dialogue that has your login has now gone back to blank.
Yeah.
Now you have to type in your username and password again, then do it again.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, my brain is not that smart. I can't keep all this stuff in my brain.
Too much. I've done that myself.
Yep. Good stuff.
Nice. 7,000 Azure IaaS users each week.
IaaS.
What more do you need to say?
That's it. That's all you need to say.
IaaS stands for something as a service.
Yep.
Internet as a service? Infrastructure as a service.
Yeah, so this is actually really interesting to me and hopefully to you, Leo.
Fascinating.
Microsoft, you know, they've been pretty close-mouthed about how many customers they've had for Windows Azure. They said in April we have 200,000 customers total, and we're not going to say anything else. Then at TechEd last week, they gave us some more numbers that were pretty interesting. They said they're adding, before April, when they didn't really have an IaaS play, which means Windows Server and Linux Server hosted on Azure, they were adding like 3,000 users for a week, 3,000 new users a week. Now they're adding 7,000 new users a week. And that's because of them having Windows Server and Linux Server hosted on Azure. And it's generally available. It's not just a preview. It's out there in final form. So Azure is actually starting to pick up steam. And this is why they decided to go head-to-head with Amazon and add IaaS to their platform and not just be a PaaS player, which is platform as a service. So their bet is paying off, and they're actually starting to add quite a few new customers. So Azure is starting to do, after a few years, starting to really gain some traction. So that's interesting for developers, customers. It's like Microsoft, yep, they're in the game now. And once you get in on, as a hosted customer, as somebody who tries out IaaS, their bet is you're going to go all the way and then do the whole platform as a service with them, like write new apps and build new services that are hosted on Azure from the get-go and not just rehosted through a virtual machine. So it's pretty interesting. Azure's gaining traction.
So what about that Xbox One, Paul?
Yeah, you know,
hey, did you know that GIF was pronounced GIF?
Azure's gaining traction.
Graphics is a hard G, and that really is something people have a hard time with.
I have a hard time with that myself, yeah. Let's take a break. Come back. We've got beer. We've got enterprise code names. We've got all sorts of stuff. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul with a great blog for Microsoft fans and interested parties at the ZDNet website. And Paul's site, of course, is super site. What?
Oh, someone just gave me a tip. I was wondering about this.
Don't! Paul...
I'm going to try that right now.
Paul's website, allaboutmicrosoft.com.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Tell people, apparently you can tap and hold on the authenticator code and it will copy to the clipboard.
That's handy. And that's in the Microsoft authenticator app.
Okay, there it is. Yeah, there it is.
That's
okay.
Handy.
I'm stupid.
No, that's great. Now you
apparently know. Apparently people aren't sophisticated enough to use this feature, Leo. I'm surprised we just mentioned that.
As we've mentioned before, discovery of gesture-based features is always challenging. If it doesn't say tap and hold to copy the clipboard, how are you supposed to know that?
I actually do know to tap and hold, which is what makes that particularly hilarious. That I wasn't able to figure that out. I know I've tried it, but okay. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Works in the Google Authenticator too, according to NW, so there.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. Same. I didn't know that either. But see, I can remember a 6-digit number for more than a few minutes. I have a knack that way.
Well, you don't have a couple of minutes. That's the problem.
Right. That's right.
Code comes and goes.
That's true. You only get 30 seconds.
Very stressful. There's a little line that goes across.
Type that password. Well, and the worst part is my live password is extremely long and convoluted because I had I had LastPass generated. So I have to look every single time.
You should tape it to the front of your phone.
There you go. Just put it right out. Yeah, I could write it in a magic marker. It's got a white back. Stand right out. Our show today brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace.com. If you need to make a website, even if it's for just for 2 weeks, you need to know about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites of all kinds. It is two things. It's web hosting plus the best content management system in the world, combining to give you an amazing, amazing tool. In fact, you don't have to even take my word for it. They have a free 2-week trial. You don't need a credit card. You don't need to give them any personal information. Just to name the site, a password, and then an email in case for password recovery purposes. And you've got 2 weeks for the run of the place. Go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. And, by the way, I asked them, it's okay with them if you got a 2-week event or something you want to commemorate. It's fine. That's fine. But if you decide you want that site to last a little bit longer, We'll talk about some of the plans they have because they're very affordable. One of the things you'll see immediately, by the way, is the Squarespace designers, and I do mean designers, great designers, are always looking to make new templates for all kinds of people, photographers, businesses, bloggers, artists. They look so good. So many photographers use Squarespace, designers and artists, for their blog. Because after all, if you're an artist, you want to have a site that reflects your style, your art. This is beautiful, isn't it? The new Momentum template with the full bleed feature is great for portfolios and photographers. Here's the deal. Try it out. If you're a coder, you're going to love it too. Yeah, of course, you don't need to know JavaScript, CSS, HTML to make a great-looking site at squarespace.com. But if you do, you're going to love it because of the developer platform with the editor, with colored syntax and all of that is just fabulous. For bloggers, photographers, businesses too, squarespace.com. Hosting that never goes down. They probably wouldn't want me to say that, but I'm going to say it. I've never seen a Squarespace site go down. And the price, if you decide to buy after your two-week trial, the basic plan is $8 a month when you buy an annual package, $10 a month, month to month, no contract. But I would say the best and the sweet spot is the $16 a month unlimited plan. That's for an annual plan. You can do $20 month to month. You get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs. You could have everybody in the world go to your site and you will never get a bandwidth bill because you have unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. You can even like create a massive like magazine site because you've got unlimited contributors, all sorts of different access levels. Very powerful. Always, all the Squarespace sites are mobile ready. They look great on any size screen. And when you buy an annual plan, you'll get that custom domain free. You want to do e-commerce? No problem. $24 a month. For unlimited physical and digital products, Squarespace does not take a cut. They'll help you set up a merchant account if you don't already have one. You have a mobile store. You get inventory tracking as part of it. You can view your shop inventory levels in real time. Sort items across the entire store by stock level, price, or title. You can it allows you to create multiple types of coupons for your store. Full tax and shipping rules by region. This is all built in. $24 a month. And when you buy an annual plan, they'll register your domain and hook it all up for you. Look, here's the deal. Try it for free. You don't need a credit card. You don't need our offer code. But if you decide to buy, please do me a favor. Do Paul and Mary Jo a favor. Use the offer code WINDOWS6 to let them know you heard it here. And in return, they're going to give you 10% off your first purchase. If that's an annual plan, the savings are significant. Squarespace.com. It's where your next website should be hosted. And I mean it. Great stuff. Windows Weekly is on the air. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. It's time to kick things off with Paul and his tip of the week.
Yeah, last week we were in New Orleans for TechEd, as you may know. And this week you can not visit New Orleans virtually, but you can visit TechEd virtually. They've put up all of the sessions, including the keynotes, in video form. You can download them to your computer, view them offline. They have most of them have slide decks, PowerPoint slide decks as well. And this is an absolutely incredible resource. And so there's stuff in there, obviously, for IT pros. But, I mean, even people who just care from sort of an enthusiast standpoint about what's happening next with Windows or whatever, there's some amazing presentations in there. And I've only watched a couple of these so far. Mary Jo will appreciate that one of the ones I watched was that Windows RT in the Enterprise session, which I think she attended in person.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good one. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those things, you know, I alternate when I work out between like actual movies and TV shows. Lately, I've been walking around the neighborhood and listening to Audible books and so forth. But I actually watch a lot of this content. And so what I do is I go through this list and I look for the stuff that I'm interested in, download it and keep it on my computer here and then watch it, you know, as I can. Sometimes I'll just play video games and have one, you know, running just so I can listen to it and kind of register what's happening there. So that was very loud. So, I just got a free AT&T message on everyone. So anyway, where is the site? It's actually at Channel 9. And so there's a dedicated TechEd North America 2013 site at channel9.msdn.com. And I think they're getting ready for Europe on this site. I mean, I have the exact URL in my show notes, and I'll put it up on my website as well. It's kind of a
it's long, but if you long. Google Tech Ed and Channel 9, you'll find it right away.
Yep, yep.
Cool.
Yeah, really good.
They did not announce anything new for Surface, right? New hardware. Weren't we thinking maybe June would be the time?
Yeah, no new Surface hardware.
Maybe a
yeah.
build?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I haven't heard one way or the other on okay. when that might happen. But yeah, that's a possibility.
There was a rumor that maybe there'd be a June announcement. I guess they've got two more weeks. Your software pick of the week was featured in that ad.
Was it really?
Yes.
That's funny. I didn't even notice that. Yeah, so Temple Run Brave has come out for both
Windows
Phone.
Actually, Brave wasn't. Temple Run 2 was.
Brave.
Yeah.
Temple Run 2. Okay, yeah. So. Temple Run Brave, you know, it's the one with the movie, the tie-in.
It's better than Temple Run. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, though, this game is very inexpensive on Windows Phone 8. It's 99 cents, but it's $5 on...
What?
On Windows RT and 8. I don't know why.
Can't recommend that. Get Temple Run 2.
Yeah. The other one that came out this week, and following in the footsteps of, I want to get the name right, there's a shooter on iOS called Modern... It's not Modern Warfare, but it's something close to Modern Warfare, which is like a Call of Duty style game, which is actually pretty incredible. That came out on Windows Phone a couple weeks back, and now we've got Nova 3, which is also
Nova's good. Yeah.
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 Really expensive. It's the most expensive Windows Phone 8 game I've ever seen. It's $6.99. But interesting that these kind of tier one games are finally starting to show up on Windows Phone.
Yeah. Good news.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to Mary Jo Foley and her Enterprise pick of the week, which I guess could be even for non-enterprise people, right?
Yeah. Actually, small and mid-sized businesses might like this pick as well. It's an Office 365 password synchronization tool that's part of Directory Sync. So I get this tip from a reader, and he was pointing out that it's not always so easy to match your Active Directory passwords with your Office 365 passwords. And there's this thing called the Office 365 Directory Synchronization Tool that will do this. It'll sync your passwords. Before this, you had to actually match your 80 passwords with your Office 365 through single sign-on ADFS, which is Active Directory Federation Services. But now, as of June 3rd, this password synchronization is included as part of your Office 365 subscription.
Cool.
If you have a mid-size or an enterprise plan. So I'll put that link too for all this information in the show notes. But yeah, if you have an Office 365 subscription, now this just got way, way easier to do. Something that used to be somewhat of a headache.
Cool. Yeah. And fans of Dakota Fanning are going to really like this code name of the week.
Yeah, I want to hear Paul's theory about this one. So during the Xbox launch on Monday at E3, they talked about this thing called Project Spark. And it looked to me like the old Microsoft Kodu gaming tool where you can build games yourself, which actually used to be a technology they pitched as teaching kids and people who are not technologically savvy how to build games really easily. So they showed this tool where you can build all kinds of games for the new Xbox One platform. And this technology now is called Project Spark. But the team that built it is known as Dakota, which is rather interesting. So I'm not sure if it's a brand new team or if it's the Kodu team revisited or what it is. But curious, why Dakota? Any theories, Mr. Thurrott?
Why it's Dakota?
Because
no.
They have far to go.
I know, right? Fargo. Yeah. There you go.
Because Dakota is a wide open world. Yeah. And
there you go.
Yeah.
Actually, my only two thoughts about this were when I heard about this, I initially thought this was their consumer / enthusiast oriented developer thing for Xbox One. And I was a little disappointed because it's
like
not
XNA
very.
SNA or?
Yeah,
like
well, less than or? SNA. Like I got nervous, you know, that this was going to be all they were doing. But then as I looked into it, I realized that wasn't. Wasn't the case. The other thing that's notable about this, I think, is that when I look at the Xbox One, God, every device I have is like drilling away.
Mine have been too, but I've been ringing all day.
It's when I look. I can't stand this kind of noise. I got to figure this out. Anyway,
I turned my Windows Phone off.
Yeah,
finally,
throw it outside. The other thing is, when you look at the Xbox today, I think the big type of game that we have on the 360 today are these first-person shooters. It's huge. It's like it's the reason you own a 360 in many cases. When I look at what they're doing with the Xbox One, the thing that I think they're really pushing this time around is this notion of open worlds.
Good.
And that they're tying it into the cloud, processing the 300,000 servers that they have on Xbox Live. Sure. Like,
that's why.
I think this is the big push, and that has something to do with it.
Well, it has been a trend in gaming, hasn't it?
Yes, but I think it's going to be we'll see if, 8 years down the road, if it's what really was the big deal. But clearly it's part of what they're pushing, a big part of what they're pushing.
Yeah.
Raphael has texted me and said that Dakota and other location names aren't copyrightable, which is why people use it.
Ah.
Yeah.
By Apple OS X Mavericks.
Yeah, Mavericks. They copied Microsoft's code naming strategy.
Yeah. They copy everything from Microsoft.
No, but wait a minute. Intel started this with their chip names that were like Rivers. Right. Yeah. And then Microsoft started using Whistler and stuff like that.
Longhorn.
Yeah. Yeah, but that makes sense because it's not copyrightable. That's what you want to use.
Does.
Yeah,
it does. I just was curious why Dakota of all places. I didn't know if there was some weird gaming connection.
OS X Texaco or something. That would get in trouble with somebody. Well, look what happened to Microsoft with Metro.
Yep, exactly.
That's what you don't want to have happen.
No, you don't.
And your beer pick of the week.
Yeah, even though you guys know I don't really care about the Xbox much.
We'll get you one of these days.
I said, let me do a beer pick with X in it this week. So it's the Bear Republic Racer X is my pick.
That's right up the road, Bear Republic.
It is. And this is an awesome double IPA. It's really good. If you like pine, hops, and citrus. And to my listeners who don't like hops, you are going to hate this beer, but everyone else is going to love this beer. It's really delicious. Even gets 100 on Rate Beer, which is the highest rating you can get.
This is unbelievable.
Yep.
Wow.
It's very, very good. And maybe when we're out there in a couple weeks, we can try some.
We might drive up to a Bear Republic for that matter. Yep. It's just up the road. What is a double IPA?
How they distinguish that, I'm not exactly sure. I should know that.
I bet it's hoppier. I think it's a hop.
Yeah, it's hops. It's throw more hops in, obviously, but I'm not sure exactly when in the boil or
I love IPAs.
I really love IPAs, too.
Yeah.
I told you, some of our listeners, though, think I do too many hoppy beer
picks. Guys, then, you would enjoy Blue Hills Brewery in Canton, Massachusetts.
Home of the hoppy
many
fine
IPAs.
Awesome. Nice. Awesome. Well, you guys are going to be up here. I'm not going to be here, I'm sorry to say. In 2 weeks, we're going to, because of Build, Mary Jo, Paul, Raphael, and a bunch of other people, too, are going to all be in San Francisco for Build. And I guess you're all invited up to the Brick House. And I was really looking forward to it and really planning it. But my son's orientation at Colorado University Boulder is that day.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So I will be flying to Boulder. I'm sorry. If you did it on Thursday, I'd be here. Yeah. But I'm flying to Boulder. So I wouldn't. I'm flying out Wednesday night. So I'm sorry, but everybody here is thrilled to have you. We're looking forward to it. There'll be lots of beer. Maybe we'll get some Bear Republic.
Can we have an effigy of you so we can play with it?
Oh, yeah. Look, you can even pull the head right off.
We'll bring you up. Yeah. We'll bring you in like a ride around town and take pictures of you.
That's a good idea. You're welcome to have this. And it even, you hit the head, it talks. It says stuff. You got to hit it hard. Anyway, Paul. So I'm looking forward to that. It's not next week. It's the week after. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you're in town for Build, come on up. The more the merrier. All we ask is that you email tickets@twit.tv. Tickets@twit.tv. And that way we'll know how many chairs to put out and how many beers to get. I think we're going to get some kegs. That's what I think we're going to end up doing.
Nice.
What are those little ones? Little keg.
Little ponies.
Ponies. There will be ponies. As the little girl said, there's a pony in there somewhere. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Paul's at All About, Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. They join us, and we do Windows Weekly and love doing it every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Please do stop by. And watch us live. If you can't, on-demand versions are made available after the fact at twit.tv/WW and at the Zune and Xbox stores and wherever else fine podcasts are aggregated. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.